This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Final Four on the women's side is set. Iowa beats LSU last night. UConn over Southern Cal. And now the Final Four is set. We have arguably the greatest women's player of all time in Caitlin Clark. We have the greatest women's program arguably of all time in UConn. We have an undefeated South Carolina team and NC State. Decent little Final Four coming up this weekend on ESPN in Cleveland, right? I mean, like, this is just a remarkable Final Four, Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, and then 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, guys.
I kind of feel bad for Juju Watkins, though, right? I mean, she is absolutely played her heart out. Everybody focuses on Caitlin Clark, and rightfully so. But the second leading scorer in college basketball this season for women was Juju Watkins. Mm-hmm. She is absolutely phenomenal, leading her team to the Elite Eight. Like, that's something that she deserves a lot of credit for. I mean, she'll be back. She'll have an opportunity to be back on this stage. But I just felt like we got to shout her out because she was absolutely phenomenal, even though her team came up short last night against UConn.
Yeah, absolutely. Juju Watkins is a star. There's no question about it. In the same kind of feel sorry for them category, how about the fact that Caitlin Clark has an unbelievable performance again last night to beat LSU in the rematch of the national title game last year? And what does she have up next? Oh, just UConn, who made their 23rd Final Four appearance in program history, the most of any program all time. Is that all? Is that all you have coming up next?
Okay. Good luck
with
that.
And if you're lucky, you get an undefeated South Carolina team.
Exactly.
If they win.
Exactly.
So you mentioned Juju Watkins, and this has been a big debate. Like, is it better for women's basketball that she's going to be forced to go back to USC, or would it be better if she had the opportunity to jump to the WNBA?
Well, I think a part of what has grown women's basketball over the years is just the opportunity to get to know these players at the collegiate level. It's been an incubator of sorts to develop these stars in the women's game. So I don't know that we necessarily want to see her jump because we're just seeing her burst onto the scene this year. And to have her on a trajectory where she could match or surpass the individual statistics that Caitlin Clark has put forth in her record-breaking season, to me, that would be fascinating. So to have that layer of intrigue in all of it, I think it'll be fun to watch, right? We're all going to be on Juju watch starting next season to see if she can maintain that trajectory that she started on in her freshman campaign. I think that being able to grow that attachment to these players in the collegiate ranks is only going to serve the women's game in a better way in terms of being able to prepare us to see them at the next level in the WNBA. So when we think about the stars now, I mean, you think about Breonna Stewart in the WNBA, you think about Asia Wilson in the WNBA, Sabrina Ionescu, like we got to know them in college basketball, in the NCAA tournament. So to continue to see the young talent on this stage and seeing it year over year, I think it creates that relationship that the WNBA is then beneficiaries of in terms of wanting to building that anticipation and seeing them take that next step.
What do you always say? Like, cosign, retweet. I probably got that messed up, but I could not agree with you more, because would we have gotten last night's game between LSU and Iowa if the rules were different? Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe we would have seen these women elect to go to the NBA the WNBA earlier. And I could not agree with you more about the fact that it's been an incubator for the talent that eventually goes to the WNBA. And with that incubation period, it's in lockstep with our fandom. As they're growing as players, so is our emotional attachment to them.
Yes.
And our connection and our interest in these players. Because of what we saw last year, we were that much more invested in what we saw last night. I can't imagine that the numbers are not bigger, but from the national championship last game into what we're seeing in the tournament this year.
And there were huge numbers. There were 10 million people that watched that national championship game a year ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Travis Scott is tweeting about being on Do Not Disturb because he's ready to lock in for LSU Iowa last night.
Yeah, and he's been at the games. I just think that it's been so beneficial for the women's game in totality for us to be able to follow along with these players and their journey and be more emotionally attached to them.
And here's the other part of the game that nobody talks about when we have this discussion. The NIL money in college basketball for these young ladies is allowing them to monetize their ability at a level that they probably wouldn't be able to do in a rookie contract in the WNBA.
Right.
So, I mean, it's actually financially beneficial for them to stay in college basketball. Now, the state of affairs, the state of play in the WNBA is going to be changing and hopefully for the better as the business evolves. But, I mean, in terms of profitability, it's not as if these young ladies are losing anything by coming back and playing college basketball.
So, a couple of follow-ups on that. Number one, based on that, should Caitlin Clark come back? Because she has another year of eligibility, and she's choosing not to. And I have no problem with her choosing not to, right? That's one question that's out there. The other question that's out there is, like, the equivalent of Juju Watkins on the men's side, if she decided to come back for a second year, we'd all sit there and be like, what are you doing? Why? What's happening? Like, go to the NBA. And that's where, again, where there's a deeper conversation to be had on this, and we can get to this. Adam Schefter is going to join us in a minute here. I believe we have Adam, if I'm not mistaken. And Adam, as always, is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp makes it easy to match with the licensed therapist. Get 10% off of your first month of online therapy at BetterHelp.com/Adam. And we'll get back to that women's basketball conversation in just a couple of minutes as Adam joins us as he does each and every week. All right, Adam, let's start out. Rashee Rice, wide receiver, Kansas City Chiefs. To your knowledge, what is going on with his situation in Dallas, Texas right now?
Well, his lawyer says he's cooperating with authorities. And so I would imagine that he's having his lawyer handle whatever business has to be done before he meets with police. So his lawyer is trying to figure out the situation. It sounds like, fortunately, there were no tragic injuries right now. And I'm sure the lawyer is trying to make sure that he does the best job handling that situation for his client as he can. I would imagine at some point he's going to be meeting with police here, and we'll see where the situation goes from there. But obviously a disturbing, concerning situation from Dallas this weekend with police searching for him after the traffic accident.
Schefter, we saw on Friday the Jets make a trade with the Philadelphia Eagles for pass rusher Hassan Reddick. How did that deal come together? How did that all materialize?
Well, you know, here's the deal. The Eagles had been open to dealing Hassan Reddick for some time. He was in the last year of his contract, and there were some big salaries going around. And it looked like they made the decision that they chose to put their money elsewhere, into other players. You saw them extend Landon Dickerson, their guard, earlier this offseason. You saw them sign Bryce up away from the Jets. You saw them sign Saquon Barkley. They've been incredibly active during free agency, allocating the money that they had to various players. One of those players was not Hassan Reddick, who wanted a new deal and has wanted a new deal. And because he wanted that new deal and because they intended not to be the team to extend him, they were open to moving on from him. Now, the irony of the whole thing is that the Jets lose Bryce Huff, who clearly there were some members of the Jets organization who weren't happy about losing him because he's a great young pass rusher. And he's a little one-dimensional in the sense that he hasn't proven yet that he could defend the run quite like you, Chris. But he certainly can rush the passer and do a great job of that. And when the Jets lost him, they had a clear and obvious need. And ironically enough, it takes them right to Philadelphia, being that Philadelphia signed Bryce Huff, and they had an extra pass rusher in Hassan Reddick that they didn't intend to pay. And so they trade Hassan Reddick to the Jets, and the Jets fill what was another hole that they had created. And they've done a really nice job of that this offseason, filling in holes at various spots. So I think really Hassan not really thrilled about not getting a contract, Eagle signing Bryce Huff. Hassan Reddick being, you never have enough defensive linemen, but an extra one if they had one to deal, and the Jets obviously inquiring on him and offering up the conditional 2026 third-round draft pick that it could become a second that gets the deal done on Friday.
Adam, we're officially in April, which means we're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. We've heard a lot about different prospects and their growth and their draft stock. But after Michael Penix Jr. had his pro day, can you share with us what you're hearing around the league and the interest that is there for Michael Penix Jr.?
I think it's high, higher than people realize. And I think that Michael Penix is going to find his way into round one is the sound of it to me. Now, again, there's still 3+ weeks left in the process. Teams still are doing their evaluations and interviews and all sorts of work on various prospects, but I think Michael Penix has clearly impressed teams to the point where, to me, I think he's going to be a one. And we'll see if that turns out to be true on draft night. Guy has great touch on the long ball, showed how fast he was on his pro day. I think he was faster than people expected him to be. The only question with him is his durability. He's had a couple of knee injuries. He's had shoulder injuries. Hasn't been able to always stay healthy. But in the biggest of spots, the guy has performed. He's gifted. He's talented. And I think he's going to wind up being a first-round pick somewhere along the way.
We're talking with Adam Schefter, of course, brought to us by BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Adam. Adam, when you look at the NFL draft, we have 3, 4, and 5 of New England, Arizona, and the Chargers, and then 11, 12, 13 with Minnesota, Denver, and the Raiders. Do you expect three of the 3, 4, and 5 to trade down and all three of the 11, 12, 13 to trade up? Or how are we looking in terms of trading up and trading down right now?
No, I don't think you're going to see 3, 4, 5 all trade. I think that that's a bit ambitious. I think what we may get, maybe, is one trade into those slots for one guy that springs free. Now, I know there are people who think, okay, well, right now, the way that it shapes up to me is Caleb Williams one. I think Jaden Daniels is the leader to become number two. And then, what is it, Drake May at three? That would be my guess. Drake May 3, and does that inspire and motivate somebody to trade up either for Drake May 3, which, you know, I don't know, is New England going to want to do that? Questionable. And then is somebody going to trade up for J.J. McCarthy somewhere, perhaps, or maybe they just sit where they are? You know, and that's the great part of this, where the closer we get, the more the teams have to put their cards on the table, and the more we find out what's true and not. I think that we're going to get three quarterbacks in the first three picks. I think that's the expectation. Again, if I had to guess today, I would guess those teams, those three teams, 1, 2, 3, stand where they are. Doesn't mean they will, but that'd be my guess 3-plus weeks out. And then we see what happens at 4, Arizona, 5, the Chargers. They're in sweet spots if there's a team that wants to trade up for J.J. McCarthy. And it's also possible that after 3 weeks from now, that these teams might not see the need to go do that. They might just sit where they are. You know, there's a lot of this jockeying talk in advance. And then come draft day, you have to see what happens. What were we talking about last year? What team's going to trade up for Will Levis? Where'd Will Levis go? Round two. Now I don't think J.J. McCarthy's going round two. I think he's going round one. But I don't know that it will wind up that somebody trades up for him. Maybe he just goes 11 or 12. That could be. That's an option. In fact, in texting with one of the individuals on one of those teams over the weekend, he's like, this will calm down, and he'll probably be there at 10, 11, 12, 13. Now, I'm not saying that's right. That's a theory. But it's amazing to me always that guys – stock rises and falls over nothing, really. Just conversation in the days leading up to the draft and in the weeks leading up to the draft. And J.J. McCarthy last week at one point was going 2. And today maybe he's number 6, and next week he'll be 11. Like, where's it going to come in? Again, that's the great part of the draft and seeing where these guys go. But I think 1, 2, 3, if I had to guess today, they stay where they are. 4 and 5, it'll be interesting to see whether, you know, here's the thing. If you're 4 and 5, you have to be comfortable enough to go back to 11, 12, 13. And you have to be comfortable enough losing out on your guy. And the team has to be offering enough to make it worth your while. There's a lot of factors. It's easy to just talk about these trades happening. It's another thing for them to actually happen. And yes, I would expect that there'll be some activity, but it's not like it's usually an upset when there is wholesale activity. It does happen in some drafts, but it's not the norm.
Shefty, last one from me. There are several veteran quarterbacks that are going into the final year of their contracts. Dak Prescott is on that list, along with Jared Goff and Tua. I mean, there have been rumors that the Jacksonville Jaguars want to get a deal done with Trevor Lawrence. I'm curious, from your perspective, when's the next mega contract for a quarterback coming, and who's going to get that deal?
Well, it doesn't sound like Dak and the Cowboys are in any rush. They haven't had any talks about a long-term extension, so we could take him off the table. We haven't heard a lot about Trevor Lawrence getting an extension. I would think at some point, maybe after the draft, this summer, maybe the two sides visit that and see if there's a deal there to be had for Trevor Lawrence. So therefore, by the process of elimination, Jared Goff is the next guy. And I will say this. You didn't even name the guy that could wind up being the next extension in Jordan Love. That is a deal that couldn't happen until May, because he redid the deal last year, the first week in May, so they can't do the deal before then due to the rules. But at some point this offseason, before training camp begins, there are people around the league who believe that Jordan Love will get extended. So maybe he's next. But I would say, how about this? The quarterback will come from the NFC North, and we'll see how that shakes out.
Okay.
Well done. Adam Schefter, each and every week at this time, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much, Adam.
Have a great week, everybody.
All right, there he is. Adam Schefter, sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp makes it easy to match with a licensed therapist. Get 10% off of your first month of online therapy at BETTERHELP.com/Adam. A lot to digest there. And, of course, more on LSU and Iowa from last night. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Very juicy stuff just now from Adam Schefter. If you missed any of it, go back on the ESPN app. Listen to our podcast. We are Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance, here on ESPN Radio, ESPNU. All right, number one takeaway from Schefter, what you just heard around the room on this one, whether it's contract extension, QB talk around the draft, number one Schefty takeaway from moments ago, guys.
Michael Penix Jr. is going to be a first rounder.
Same.
I mean, I've been bullish on Michael Penix Jr. I think he's the fourth best quarterback in his class. And hearing what Schefty just said, it feels like there are a lot of people in NFL circles that have a stronger opinion on Michael Penix Jr. than the media or mainstream football fans do. And so I think we have to start changing the way that we view this dude. And I think the athleticism that he showed at his pro day, it's what is what's going to make somebody fall in love with him. We already know that he's a prolific passer, but being able to show the wheels, the ability to get out of harm's way, to run a sub-4.640, even after all of the knee surgeries that he's had, to have a 36-inch vertical jump that shows a level of explosiveness and athleticism that I don't think people were attributing to Michael Penix Jr. When we think about the elite athletes at the quarterback prospects, we think about Jaden Daniels, we think about Drake May, we think about J.J. McCarthy. We didn't view Michael Penix in that same class, but based on what he showed at his workout and based on what Schefty said just now, I think we have to start changing the way we look at him.
My takeaway was the exact same, CC. We've talked so much about the quote-unquote top three guys in Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May, and it seems like over the past couple weeks, the profile of J.J. McCarthy has certainly risen, and we were talking about teams being interested in him. But for Adam Schefter to say after the pro day, more teams than we realize are high on Michael Penix Jr. There's always some sort of surprise on draft day. I wonder if one of those surprises will be that Michael Penix Jr. goes higher than we expect.
Are you saying, Smalls, you think he could be the fourth pick? Fourth quarterback, excuse me, picked. Like maybe he goes ahead of J.J. McCarthy?
Maybe. Depends on the team that's willing to jump up and secure the quarterback that they think is the best, the one that's higher on their draft board. We know that teams are evaluating these quarterbacks differently, and their rank of them might not be what we expect them to be. And Michael Penix Jr. certainly has a lot of qualities that I think teams would find desirable in what will eventually be their franchise quarterback.
I'm curious, I'm curious to know how NFL talent evaluators view this class in comparison to the 2021 quarterback draft class, where we saw five quarterbacks come off the board in, what, the first 15 picks? Like, I'm just curious to know. I mean, because we have such elite prospects at the position. And, I mean, we're talking about teams having to get up inside of the top five to get J.J. McCarthy, and he's going to be the fourth quarterback off the board. Like, I wonder if we could see five quarterbacks go in the top 13, 14 picks this year in the draft, considering the teams that are going to be in the early teens that are looking for quarterbacks. I mean, you have a cluster of teams. Minnesota at 11. We think they're going to try to move up. Denver Broncos at 12. Las Vegas Raiders at 13, who have let it be known that they're going to try to move up if their guy's on the board. So I'm just saying, when you look at those cluster of teams, why would we think that it's not entirely possible to have five quarterbacks come off the board in the first 13 picks?
I don't think that's unreasonable.
I think we could have six in the top 15.
Wow.
I don't think it's unreasonable at all. Now, it is interesting because you referenced the draft with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, right? And it's funny, when Shefty was talking to us about J.J. McCarthy, kind of a team just sitting there and waiting for him, I started thinking about the Pats just sitting there waiting for Mac Jones, which worked out by way of draft, just not worked out by way of play after that when he was drafted. But biggest takeaway with Schefter, non-draft. So quarterback extension-wise, what was your number one takeaway non-draft from Schefter moments ago?
The Jordan Love of it all.
Yeah. For sure.
Like saying that Jordan Love is the quarterback that's next in line for a mega deal. I don't think we were thinking about it that way with Jordan Love because of what they did with the contract and the fifth-year option. Instead of giving him the fifth-year option, they opted for a two-year deal to extend him. But I think you got proof of concept last year in what he did and how he performed. And so it does make some sense that you would want to get ahead of this thing, that you would want to be next in line because of where the quarterback market is poised to go, knowing that the salary cap went up $30 million this offseason.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to be thinking about a Jordan Love contract, but you're right. Once Adam put that out in the ether, it does make all the sense in the world. Why would you delay the inevitable with Jordan Love? And yeah. I don't think the Packers
want... He ain't getting cheaper.
No, exactly. And I think that they want to probably get that out of the way sooner rather than later.
$12 million, $12.5 million for Jordan Love this year, and then not under contract after that. CeCe, correct me if I'm wrong. They could technically franchise him after that?
Or would
they,
yes.
Okay, so even if they don't work out an extension, theoretically they have the 1 year where he's going to make average value of top five quarterbacks in the league, so he'll make a ton of money, but probably would not be satisfied with that. There's no reason to think that they would not extend him. The only counter, I guess, would be he's only done it for a year, but he was pretty damn good for the 1 year he did it. So I assume they will extend him, but that's interesting that maybe the next player that becomes the highest paid player in the NFL is actually Jordan Love. And that was an interesting curveball there from Schefter. Jordan Love, certainly one who got it done this year, CC, and Granger for the ones that get it done.
For the ones who get it done, Granger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgranger.com or just stop by Granger for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides.
See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio. MLB Old Faces and New Places with Jeff Passan. Brought to you by TaxAct. Sonny Gray, St. Louis Cardinals.
The St. Louis Cardinals spent the first month of free agency overhauling their rotation with the signings of right-handers Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, and Sonny Gray, who was coming off a runner-up finish in the American League Cy Young vote. He commanded a three-year, $75 million contract from St. Louis. The Cardinals hope he can provide major innings for a team that desperately needs them. St. Louis went 71-91 last season, their worst record since 1995, and the biggest culprit was pitching. The rotation had a 5.08 ERA, fifth worst in the big leagues. And when the bullpen was added to the mix, the ERA was 4.79, ranking 24th. The Cardinals had only right-hander Miles Michaelis and left-hander Steven Matz under contract for 2024, so the additions of Gray, Lynn, and Gibson filled the team's biggest need. Gray was slated to start opening day for the Cardinals, but suffered a hamstring injury in spring training and opened the season on the injured list. After five straight playoff berths before last season, the Cardinals are banking on this revamped rotation to get them back to playing October baseball and looking for a return trip to the World Series for the first time in more than a decade.
Jeff Passan's Old Faces in New Places. Brought to you by TaxAct. Let's get them over with.
Old Faces in New Places, brought to you by TaxAct. Let's get them over with somebody that is definitely perfect for this show. A former Yankee that CC hates and a Cardinal that... Well, I don't know, Smalls, if you even want on your team in Sonny Gray. How do we feel about Sonny Gray being featured as part of Old Faces in New Places? Yesterday, Passan featured Shohei Ohtani. Today, Sonny Gray. I think he and TaxAct did this specifically for this show.
Well, just to take everyone behind the curtains, as that started to play, CeCe leaned over to me and said, good luck with that one.
Yeah, 3 years, $75 million. Yeah, we'll see how that works for y'all. I don't trust it. I don't trust him. I saw enough of Sonny Gray in a Yankees uniform to make me cool on Sonny Gray for the rest of his career. I don't care if he was the runner-up for the AL Cy Young last year. Doesn't matter to me. I know what that is when games matter the most. Just saying.
I know he's ramping up his activity. He's going to make a start for AAA Memphis this week, I believe. So I'm excited to see him actually in action for the Cardinals. But I don't have a ton of confidence in the rotation to be markedly better than what happened last year.
It's going to be painstaking watching him pitch. Yeah. The guy nibbles at the strike zone. It's awful. It is absolutely awful. It's not great.
Thanks, Passan.
I'm not saying he's not an effective pitcher. I'm just saying the way that he goes about his business, he is a nibbler around the strike zone. Like he's not gonna overpower batters. That's not his style. It's a lot of off speed pitches and it's at the edges. And it's just like it's gonna be a lot of long counts. It's gonna be again, it's not the most entertaining brand of pitching. I'll leave it at that.
All right, there was something big that did happen in baseball last night. We did have a no-hitter, Ronald Blanco of the Astros, 7 Ks, 2 walks, in a 10-0 victory over the Toronto Blue Jays. And it is amazing what has happened in Major League Baseball relative to the no-hitter. Back in my day, now I'm trying to really be old, but it would be everybody stops what they're doing to tune into a no-hitter. Now it feels like it is so common that we don't even bat an eye. Like, you were not getting me away from the Astros. No, excuse me, not to the Astros, away from LSU and Iowa last night. You just weren't. I've seen no-hitters so often, and a lot of times, as Smalls mentioned in the SportsCenter update just now, this is a guy that showed up to Major League Baseball at 28 years old, and now he's 30, and I'm not knocking him. It's a tremendous performance, but it's not always the best pitchers that throw the no-hitter. I don't want to say it's overrated, but it's not what it used to be in terms of throwing a no-hitter in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it was Blanco's eighth career start. You know, you're right. Back in the day, we used to, when it came to no-hitters, it was the stars of the game that were able to execute that. And now it's guys that we'll talk about for a week or two. And we'll say a year from now, oh, yeah, remember when Blanco had a no-hitter? That's right, because his name will be brought up. But it has become incredibly commonplace in the game.
Yeah, but you would think it would be harder, right? It's almost counterintuitive because teams don't let pitchers go deep into games anymore. Like, usually
that's right.
You're asking a guy to get you through the rotation twice, then you're pulling him because analytics say once the lineup sees that pitcher for the third time, that the batting average is going to go up. The chances of them being able to do damage is going to go up. So you're usually talking about snatching a guy and going to your bullpen after he gets you two times through the order. So what does that put you at? The fifth inning, sixth inning sometimes when these guys are getting pulled? The fact that you would let a guy go long enough to pitch a no-hitter, it, again, like I said, it seems counterintuitive, yet it feels like it's happening at a higher rate or more frequency than we've seen in years past, which does dumb it down a little bit.
So we said there was nothing that was going to take us off of LSU and Iowa last night, not even a no-hitter in Major League Baseball. I don't remember the last time a game lived up to the hype to this level of expectation. And that may be recency bias. It probably is, right? The Super Bowl, you could always say, lives up to the hype. You know, we have playoff games with the Ravens and the Chiefs, right? Like, there's always great games. I'm not saying there's not. But we all knew going into this game last night between Iowa and LSU, the world would be watching. We knew that all eyes would be on Caitlin Clark, 41, 12 assists and 7 rebounds, and Angel Reese, through an injury, 17 points and 20 boards. Yeah, I mean, it lived up to the hype in such a way I couldn't take my eyes off of it. I passed up a free chicken parm dinner last night. That's how much I was all in. And when I, Cece, you know, when I pass up a chicken parm dinner, you know I'm in on a game. And so, it totally lived up to the hype. Women's basketball, it's at its peak right now. Caitlin Clark is the biggest star. And oh, by the way, if Angel Reese is your second biggest star last night, you're in really good shape because she's awesome at basketball.
Yeah, I think that Caitlin Clark is certainly a reason why a lot of people have brought their attention to women's basketball specifically this season. But I don't want to in any way minimize how important it was to have LSU be the matchup last night.
Yeah.
It was a rematch from last year's title game. Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, their competitive nature, the two of them going at one another on the court, not off the court. That was why we were locked in. If they had a different opponent last night, sure, a lot of people would have been watching the game, but it wouldn't have been to the level of must-see TV that it was last night because it was Iowa and because it was LSU. You had the star power and Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. Kim Mulkey obviously is another big character in the game, and a lot of people tune in because they love or hate her. And I think that that's what's important about this matchup. Not only are we witnessing some of the best basketball players that we've ever seen in the women's game, but people are emotive about them. You feel a certain type of way about LSU, about Iowa. You either love Angel Reese or you hate her. Same thing with Caitlin Clark. I just think that that is so important to the development of the women's game, is not only are people tuning in because it's great basketball, but they have an emotional connection to these women as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's the two biggest stars in the sport, right? I'm not saying they're the best players, but it's the two biggest stars in the sport. Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark are household names, and they've been that way for the better part of the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the fact that you had them on this stage in the Elite Eight matching up to go to the Final Four, that only adds to the drama, adds to the theater, and then the fact that you have the history between them and how Angel Reese and LSU won the national championship game a year ago, that adds to the suspense. So, yeah, it's been a rivalry in the making for the last several years, and to have that, you know, culminate into what we saw last night, a back-and-forth affair throughout the entirety of the first half, and then Caitlin Clark and Iowa pulling away in the third quarter, I thought it was special. The fact that you had all of these haymaker punches that each one of them was throwing. I mean, it comes out Iowa on a 17-9 run, and then LSU goes on a 22-9 run after Kim Mulkey gets that early timeout. I mean, for Flajae Johnson to hit the layup to tie the game at 45 at halftime, like that adds to, you know, the entertainment value of what we saw last night. So I think it was an awesome game. It lived up to the hype, and Caitlin Clark punched Iowa's ticket to the Final Four, and I'm excited to see what she's going to do as an encore once we get to Cleveland.
America's analyst, Tim Legler, joins us next. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
America's analyst, Tim Legler. Give him anything, he'll analyze it, including Easter egg hunts we learned yesterday on our show here on Unsportsmanlike, along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen, with you. Legs, story of the night in basketball, not anything in the NBA, but everything in women's college basketball. Your reactions after watching Iowa advance to the Final Four over LSU or what, Legs?
I don't think Tim could hear you, Evan, so I'm going to just relay
purpose,
the question.
On purpose. Forget him.
Tim, while we get you situated here, Evan wanted to know, obviously you have shared with us how much you enjoy watching Caitlin Clark and what your reaction was last night to watching Iowa-LSU, because we know you were locked in.
Can't overstate how spectacular it was because of the level of buildup, the hype, the scrutiny she was under, the pressure she was under, the game plan she was going to face. You know, the level of athletes she was going to be going up against, you can't overstate it to deliver on that level. And the most impressive part for me was to watch a player that great in that moment. Like, this is, like, in a lot of ways, like a career-defining type of game. Mm. To slow it down to the extent that she did, to be able to play more on balance on her shooting, like to be able to find people when she had to. And not, you know, rush it or panic or put too much pressure on herself to deliver. I just thought her pace that she played at and the poise with which she played, despite all of that going on around her, that is really the essence of what greatness is. Your ability to slow it down in the moment and process things completely differently than everybody else on the floor, and then let your skill deliver. Let your muscle memory take over without letting your brain interrupt it. And that's what I was watching last night.
I mean, Legs, you opened the door. I'm going to walk through it. You called last night a career-defining moment. Does Caitlin Clark need the championship to validate all of the individual statistics and accolades that she's been able to accrue in her time in Iowa?
I don't believe she does. I really don't. Look, South Carolina is a better team. If they end, look, and first they got to get by UConn. If they end up playing South Carolina and losing in the national championship game to a team that's undefeated, that's just better, how can you really pin that on Caitlin Clark? Mm. I think she's cemented who she is, what she is, what her legacy certainly will be as a college player, and now we're going to wait and find out what's going to happen as we go forward as a WNBA player. But no, I personally do not think that, because sometimes you're going to run into a team that just has too much, even for a player like Caitlin Clark to potentially overcome. Look, maybe they beat South Carolina if that matchup even takes place. Both those teams have to win a game first. They might win that game. I'm not ruling it out. But if they lose that game, and particularly if she plays well, how can you really lay that at her feet?
Tim, we were talking about Caitlin Clark's legacy overall and whether or not she needed a championship. But if she does win, the fact that on the way there, the path that led her to that, she took down Angel Reese and LSU, last year's champion that beat her in the finals, UConn, one of the most storied programs in basketball, period, and an undefeated, potentially, South Carolina team. Does that put to rest any other competition she may have in the conversation of best ever?
Yeah, I think so. She pulls this off and she runs the table and wins these last two games, particularly under the circumstances with which you just described. Yes, give it to her. The debate will be over at that point. I mean, in a lot of people's minds, it already is. But right. If you go ahead and finish it off in that manner, I don't know how you really argue that.
Legs,
we're talking. Go ahead.
There we go.
We're talking with America.
You can actually hear him now.
Wow. You actually didn't block me out.
There we go.
I got you. What's up?
I'm talking with Tim Legler, America's analyst here on Unsportsmanlike. Legs, I love the NBA. You love the NBA. We all, CC Smalls, we all love the NBA. That said, the women's game is so much more visually pleasing to me than watching NBA games during the regular season. And it's not that I'm going to stop watching NBA. I'm going to watch every night. But what we saw last night was just pure, wonderful, hard-nosed ball movement. Like, it was just, it was great. Am I nuts to think that?
Well, I will say this. I wouldn't necessarily make a blanket statement like that. There's a lot of nights I watch the NBA and I feel that way. I do understand what you're saying because there's other nights I watch the NBA and there's a monotony to it right now with high ball screen, three-point shot. Like, you feel like that's eight straight trips. That's what we're looking at. One ball screen, driving kick, somebody shoots a three. Like, that's what it looks like for large chunks of the game. But it's not always like that. So I wouldn't necessarily make that kind of a blanket statement, but I agree with what I was watching last night and what I've watched in general this season in women's basketball. For me, to watch something that compelling with that kind of drama, that's that entertaining at the same time, that was an NBA-level pace in the first quarter and in the fourth quarter. And think about this. Like, the first quarter, you expect there to be some nerves, there to be some, like, some, you know, uneven play offensively. Exact opposite. These two teams come out full throttle, right? Mm-hmm. 31, 29, whatever it was at the end of the first quarter. Like, your head's spinning when they go to commercial break. Then it's the second and third quarter became a little bit more of a slugfest. And then the fourth quarter is when you think, okay, now the nerves really kick in and the game's going to slow down. Exact opposite. Fourth quarter was sensational. It was almost as good as the first quarter. So that's the level of play we were watching last night. And by the way, I just want to say this about Caitlin Clark. None of what you see is possible without her passing ability. She's not beating you solely as a shooter and a scorer. If that's her thing, she's not beating teams like that. It's the fact that she's the dual threat, that she makes you pay to the extent that she does. When you make a mistake defensively or you turn your head or you put too much attention on her, her ability to not only know where to throw it, but to be able to execute it with the level of skill, whatever that may be, a wraparound pass, a pocket pass, you know, a no-look pass, a thread the needle on the break type of pass, that is what allows her to be the shooter that she is. It's the dual threat component, like a Luka Doncic type of component, where every trip she's in control because she can also beat you in a different way than just putting the ball in the basket.
Yeah, it's one of the most unselfish 40-point games I've ever seen. Transitioning, we're going to go to the NBA. We got a Woj bomb yesterday. Joel Embiid is expected back with the Philadelphia 76ers. What does that make the Sixers in the Eastern Conference?
All right, so if Caitlin Clark were to play Joel Embiid, I think we're just going to get it back to her on every question. Listen, if you inject Joel Embiid right now into the Eastern Conference playoffs with fresh legs, which is what he's going to have, now he might have a little bit of rust, a little bit of stamina issues, a little bit of, you know, minutes restriction. But he's going to work all that out in these remaining games if he's to play tonight as is expected. You throw him to the Eastern Conference playoffs, they're going to probably get Miami in a play-in game. Philadelphia would be favored to win that game. And then if they got the seventh seed, be interesting. Greeny just laid this out on Get Up. Then you get Doc Rivers, Joel Embiid against his old coach. Right now, as uneven as Milwaukee's season has been, Philadelphia absolutely could beat them. I'm not going to make that prediction now. I don't have to. I'll wait till see how he looks and how it goes for the Philadelphia leading up to that. But their ceiling is the conference finals, and I would rarely ever say that about a team that's getting a guy back this late in the season that hasn't played, that's coming out of the play-in spot. I'm not going to say, hey, they can make it all the way to the last round in their conference. I think they could, because I think there's just enough there beyond Boston that Philadelphia could grab. And that's why this is so interesting and compelling to get him back this time of year.
Speaking of Boston, Tim, we had this conversation on the show earlier. They've had a sensational regular season. But when it comes to the playoffs, how much do you trust them to get it done?
Yeah, I trust them more than I have before, because Jaylen Brown is on a completely different level than he has been. And I think that's the ultimate crutch for Jason Tatum, because I think Jason Tatum is going to be wearing the pressure of the last finals performance, right? We saw him against Golden State. He got outplayed by Steph Curry in that series. And people have questioned that. And so now, if he's feeling all of that, then I think it's going to be something where we question it again. But the balance in their starting five, I mean, adding the guys that they added, adding Jrue Holiday, adding Porzingis, this is the most complete starting five in basketball. And most importantly, you have a guy now in Jaylen Brown that a lot of nights makes it look like it's his team. So, and that's great for Jason Tatum. It takes a lot of pressure off of him. I have more faith that Jaylen Brown could compensate on those nights when Jason Tatum, if he were to struggle, I think they've got an answer for it now that maybe in the past was a little bit inconsistent. And so then Jason Tatum would be the guy taking the brunt of it. I don't think that's the case anymore.
Langton, about 10 seconds or so here. Would you rather be the one seed or the two seed in the West?
Would I rather be the one seed or the, what's the premise of your question? Why you well, the like you one got seed behind that?
Right, of course I do. The one seed would face probably the Lakers or the Warriors. The two seed would face the Suns.
Oh, you definitely want to be the two. I didn't know where you were going with that. Yes, you want to be the two seed for sure. You don't want to get the Lakers or the Warriors. I don't believe. I think Phoenix still, despite what happened last night, Devin Booker had a big game. I still think there's some questions about Phoenix.
We're on Sportsmanlike.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.